It's time for Radio Vermont's News and Public Affairs program, Open Mic, with Hester Fuller. The phone lines to speak with Hester are open, 802-244-1777, toll-free 1-877-291-8255. And now here's your host, Hester Fuller.
Thanks, John, and welcome, everybody. Another Monday, here we are on Open Mic until 11 o'clock this morning. My name is Hester Fuller, and I will be with you for this entire 2 hours. Today, you are the stars of the show, as you always are, interested in what you think about the things that have been going on around Vermont and around the country. It's been quite a lively weekend on many, many fronts. We have more elections, primary votes coming up this week. We have some interesting contests. Generally, consensus seems to be that the Ohio primary is going to be a big deal in both the Republican and the Democratic races. New polls out this morning are showing that Hillary Clinton has a lead, but it's a pretty narrow lead compared to the polls that we saw last week. It's only about five points or so ahead of Senator Sanders. And you know how things went last week. We had the primary results that totally upended the poll data in Michigan, and it was pretty consistent all across the board. The poll data going into that primary indicated that Governor Sanders was going to go down into a serious defeat, but of course he pulled it out. He eked out the victory over Hillary Clinton, and it was a big surprise to everybody. One of the questions we're going to take up today is we're going to be talking in a little while about polling and survey science and what actually goes into that work and how we as consumers of media, consumers of these reports and people who have to make the very important decision about who's going to lead this country starting next January, how we should deal with poll data that we hear. That's coming up a little bit later on. Right now, though, I'm open to your calls, and Shirley is calling in. Hi, Shirley.
Good morning.
What's new?
Well, it's what's old.
Okay, what's old?
Both me and conversation you were having last Monday when the talked about term limits, and you were generally supportive of term limits, and what I wanted to add was a little historical perspective, because I was around at the time.
Okay.
And of course, they were imposed by the Republican Party because they saw all those Kennedys out there, and it was done in order to see that the dead Roosevelt would never be able to run again, because he had driven everyone crazy. And, you know, got elected 4 times, unheard of. And there is a downside to the term limits, which I want, you know, some of you to think about, and that is the minute that somebody is elected to whatever their term limited thing, 2 years in Vermont, but 4 years generally, that second term, they really become a portion, I'm sorry for my croaky voice.
That's okay.
They begin to be a lame duck, and that takes, sometimes it's a pleasant atmosphere and it doesn't amount to much, but in these times, what we've been seeing in recent years is this madness of really, you know, trying to block Obama, they're not going to elect him again, even though he can't be, and it was just, I just want people to remember that there are some downsides to the term limit argument, and we ought to be thinking about not re-electing the dead Roosevelt, and those Kennedys took care of themselves in one way, unfortunate way, and another. So it's not, it didn't serve the purpose that the Republican Party intended at the time. And I might say, at that time I was growing up in Connecticut and was in the same town as the national chairman of the Republican Party. So I was once a card-carrying Republican before I realized I've always been a small-D Democrat. So that's perspective from the person who is, I think, 3 months older than WDEV.
Gracious.
Whoever that
Worthy of respect in any event, and I appreciate very much your comment. That was actually a thread of the conversation we had last week about what happens when we have such short elected terms. Do we have candidates rolling into office and then just turning around after the first go to run for their second term, and how much of a distraction is that? The other piece of that is it takes some time to get work done. It takes time to build relationships that are going to enable elected officials or administrators to work together in order to accomplish things. And if you are constantly hanging out new laundry, then you're going to have a hard time making those connections. Shirley, thanks so much for your call and your comment about term limits. Like to hear what other folks have to say this morning, too, maybe about that topic, maybe about some of the other things that are in the news today. It's been a pretty busy news weekend. Of course, Mr. Trump has loomed large in the discussion as a result of some of the stuff that's been happening at his rallies. I'm interested in what you think about that. Has his performance over the weekend or the performance of folks who are attending his rallies influenced your feeling about who would be a good nominee for the Republican Party? I'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. My stalwart sidekick here, Mr. Tom McLeod, is standing by and ready to take your calls. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Hester. Did you have a good weekend?
I had a wonderful weekend. I did. I helped a friend with her shearing project yesterday. Sheared 40 sheep.
How long does that take?
It took a good long time, several hours, but it was a lot of fun. There was some visiting that went on and some cider donuts that went down, and we had a very good time, actually. It was a lot of fun. Real sign of spring.
Weather was nice.
It was beautiful. Yeah. It really was. I was actually in a T-shirt for part of the effort, and that felt pretty good.
Yeah. No, it was kind of I remember we had, here's a phone call, but I remember we had a march maybe, 3 years ago that was in the 70s?
Mm-hmm. So I'll take another one. That'd be fine.
That'd be okay. All right, let me get the call. Be right
Tom's going to catch up on that phone call there. I'd like to hear from you. If you're out there and you're listening and you have thoughts about news of the day, give us a call at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. If you got thoughts about the ongoing presidential contest, love to hear them. If you want to talk about something else, that's perfectly fine with me as well. Give us a call and tell us what's on your mind today. Monday, start of the work week. Had a weekend to stop and think about the things that went on last week, and other things have arrived on the scene as well. Oh, here's a favorite. Hi, Rama. How are you? You're down in Williamstown.
Well, good morning, and I thank you for saying here's a favorite. Most people have other terms for me.
What's on your mind this morning? You're always thoughtful. I appreciate that.
I think that at this point, because it has been about 100 years now since the rise of fascism in Europe. And so, you know, when you go back in the 1920s, the late 19-teens and the 1920s is when fascism first started really coming into a rise. And we're at a point where nobody really is alive who remembers the rise of it. There are still a few people alive who remember having to go to war to fight it.
Yep, and I think there are certainly many people, myself included, who certainly remembered vividly conversations and reports and just the stories of what fascism wrought in the lives of people we are close to and
yes,
we're close
but-
to.
That is starting to get removed from real experience with it. And yes, my father was over in the Pacific during World War II, so you know I grew up in that family, in that sort of family too. But what I find troublesome is that, you know, we've seen what the same general trend that pushed towards fascism coming from, and I blame the Republican Party primarily for this, but I blame the Democratic Party for not having any real response to it and any way forward out of it up until very recently. But when people start looking at the likes of Donald Trump or even Ted Cruz or pretty much any of the other Republicans, that we really need to be aware of where the rise of fascism came from and what it ended up meaning, that it put itself forward as being, yes, you know, this is a chance for you to regain control of your country, but what it really was designed to and what it really ended up being was dictatorial control. Is that, you know, I mean, we ended up with Mussolini's Italy, Hitler's Germany, Franco's Spain, and Tojo's Japan out of all of that. And
Rama, I'm going to interrupt you just briefly and ask you to break it down in concrete terms. What are the things you see happening that give rise to this cautionary note that you are striking, which I share, by the way. What are the specific things that you see happening that make you worry about this?
Well, the specific things, a lot of it has to do with how anger has been used to direct people to attack other groups. And this is something which has been going on in the Republican Party for at least the previous decade in a very overt fashion, but covertly it was a little bit before then. And to put it into a more concrete example is what we see with Donald Trump and at his rallies, where he, you know, I mean, face it, he directly encourages people to take their anger and vent it outwards at other people. And whether he wants to lay claim that, oh, I'm not doing this, you know, I'm just a messenger. Well, yeah, you're not supposed to be the messenger for violent anger. And that's what he is putting himself out there for very successfully.
You know, one of the things that, and I wonder what you think about this idea, I have seen him on television doing these things. I know that he books his own halls and therefore is able to call these rallies of his private events. But if there are any constitutional scholars out there or lawyers who've had to deal with these situations, I can't believe that what he's doing is legal just because it's a quote-unquote private event. I don't understand why we don't see, you know, why he's not.
You're on a school board, so I can.
Actually,
I can,
I'm not anymore. I stepped aside from that. So.
Oh, okay. but even at public events, you are allowed to enforce a modicum of order.
Mm-hmm.
So that even at the small select board or school board meeting, so who's the chair of the meeting, Ken, if somebody's being unruly, has it within their authority to call the police and insist that somebody be removed from a meeting. So the fact that somebody can who's ever leading a particular meeting can exercise some form of control over making sure proceedings can occur is not strange in itself. And, well, what is, I mean, first of all, it's Donald Trump saying that his free speech rights are being violated at a private event is kind of ludicrous, because a private event, by definition, is not necessarily open to the constitutional protections. So he's got to kind of deal with what happens at his private events. But the big thing is, regardless of what happened, he gets up there on stage and through direct words, he actually encourages people to vent their physical anger at other groups.
And well, that's exactly my point. I don't understand how that can be legal.
Well, it's because he's not crossing a line that says that he's threatening other people. It's wordplay, maybe. I don't know. But it probably falls under the realm that you can say, God, I may, you know, I could say on the radio that you make me so angry I could strangle you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, I don't think anybody would mistake that for the kind of speech we're hearing from Mr. Trump, though.
Well, this is the defense that he's now making, is that his speech is much along that he's not really encouraging people. He's just using words to express, you know, how people feel, and how people act off those words is what they do and not what he does.
Mm-hmm. But, well, I hear what you're saying. I've had a number of conversations with friends of mine who maybe all their lives have leaned Republican, who just find him, to put it mildly, unpresidential when he behaves that way, and he's not someone that they are interested in seeing leading the country.
I hope that's true. I really do. Mm-hmm. And I hope that it's more than him just being non-presidential. Mm-hmm. He should not be considered a realistic political leader in this country for anything, period, with the attitudes he displays.
Well,
I would kind of close it out by saying, if people really want to know what you're going to get with Donald Trump, read the history of Benito Mussolini. And the sad thing is, there's an awful lot of young people that are doing things like that are willing to gravitate towards somebody like Donald Trump because they perceive him as being outside of the mainstream, which he really isn't. I mean, he's as mainstream, if you look at how he's made his money and what he's done on television, he's as mainstream as you're going to get. But that perceive him as being somebody who's going to stand up to the authority. And that's not what he's about. He's about standing up to authorities that aren't him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to protect his authority at all costs.
Well, listen, thanks, Rama, for those comments. Let's see what other folks think of those ideas. And we look forward to talking to you again, I hope, next week. What do you think about what Rama has to say? What do you think about Mr. Trump's behavior? Does this make sense to you as the way a candidate should behave himself? Is that something that you would sanction? I imagine not. I imagine that's just a rhetorical question. But what is it about him? Why do you think he has this draw? Give us a call and let us know. And how about our buddy Mr. Sanders? What do you think is going to happen next tomorrow? Gracious, tomorrow in places like Florida and Ohio, in Illinois or Missouri or North Carolina. What do you think is going to happen on what some folks are calling Super Tuesday number two? Jean from Barrie, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm so afraid the way this is going that there's going to be a shooting or something somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm so scared. But I think the Republican parties are hurting themselves.
How so?
I think Hillary's going to end up as the president. I might be wrong, but she's got a good, and she knows all these head ones, you know, in the foreign countries,
mm-hmm.
and she knows a lot of these that are running as, mm-hmm. for the president.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. I may be wrong, but I hope they let up on this because I'm afraid there'd be a shooting. There's been shootings and less things going on, you know, than this.
Well, it certainly does feel dangerous out there to disagree.
Oh, I know it. And that's the trouble with this world. There's mm-hmm. too much hatred.
Mm-hmm.
There's more hatred, I think, than there is love. We're supposed to love one another.
Well, that's the rumor, but it seems to be hard to find that spirit, doesn't it?
But he does. People just like to hear him. You know, they love excitement. They love to, they like to go to races. They love boxing and stuff. I don't care for that stuff. I don't like seeing people hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people, they go for that for some reason.
it seems so. And I don't really understand why.
I don't either.
Unless they think it's not a serious, unless it's still for them political theater, you know,
in a circus. We're supposed to love one another, not hate one another.
Well,
but there's so much hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too bad, you know.
Yep. Yeah. Jean, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate hearing from you. And we want to hear from others out there as well. What do you think about the race and what's happening? What do you think about the spectacles we witnessed on TV over the weekend? The performance that we see in some of Mr. Trump's rallies, the crowds we see turning out for Bernie Sanders. What do you make of that? How is that going to play out, do you think, long haul? Have you been following the polls? We all know last year the polls on the Michigan race turned out to be dead wrong, every single one of them, by substantial margins. This week's polls looked, they're specifying a smaller margin, still in favor of Mrs. Clinton. What do you think is going to happen? We're going to have some folks on in just a minute to talk a bit about polling science and survey research and how it gets done. We're looking forward to chatting in a bit with Rich Clark, who is the director of the Castleton Polling Institute, and hearing from him. Oop, looks like he's here already. Okay, well, maybe we'll just jump over that way unless we have some business to take care of first. Okay, we do. Tom is telling me we need to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk to Rich Clark. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic. Hester Fuller is my name. I'm here with you on WDEV every Monday from 9 until 11, and you are the stars of this program. We love to hear what you think about current events, about the things that are going on in your corner of Vermont. The number here is 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. We've been talking in the last few minutes about the progress of the presidential races, and we were just talking a minute ago about Senator Sanders and the upset that he pulled in Michigan, surprised everyone by eking out a victory over his rival there, Hillary Clinton. With me on the line right now is Rich Clark, who is the director of the Castleton Polling Institute. Rich, good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Pi Day. Happy Pi Day to you. I was going to go there eventually, but I'll go there now. Rich, what happened last week? How could all the polls be off by so much, as much as 30 points in some cases?
Right. And so, you know, I don't think all polls are created equal. So I think it's worth taking a look at some of the polls that had the wild projections of the close to 30 points.
Mm-hmm.
When you looked at Real Clear Politics, who's a poll aggregator,
mm-hmm.
they pulled the average, and they had an average of 21-point lead for Clinton, which seems completely insurmountable.
Mm-hmm.
But that's based on three polls, two of which I have to say are questionable, and I'm not sure why the good people at Real Clear Politics continue to put in these types of polls.
Now, what is questionable about them?
Okay, so the first is one of them was done. It's a one day done on a Sunday afternoon by robo-calling. Okay, so really, if you want to think about who you can generalize such a poll to, I would say the generalization is that this would represent what people who have landline phones think about the race, who are happen to be home on a Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
And it's hard to say much. It's hard to project much beyond that.
Maybe we should back up a step so that folks understand. Where do these phone numbers come from? Do they just randomly dial up callers, or do they make an effort to target particular people? Or how does the robocalling thing work anyway?
Well, first, robocalling could work a number of different ways. And I have to tell you, on those two polls, they don't produce a lot of details about their methodology.
Mm.
So I can't tell you whether that was from a list of registered voters or from a random digit dialing technique. So there are polling organizations that belong to the Transparency Initiative, where they'll put out all of their methodology. So you can kind of sift through it and to see, I can understand where this might have gone wrong or that. And then other organizations where the methodology is pretty well hidden, and in which cases we can only speculate on what they might have done.
So I should probably ask you at this point, because folks are probably now wondering, what are the two polls whose methodologies seem suspect to you?
Well, there was the Fox 2, the Detroit poll, the Mitchell poll, which mm-hmm. was a robocalling. That was the one done on the Sunday before the it wrapped up on the 7th. And, you know, it was had a lead for Clinton of 27 points.
Mm.
You know, when you think about how cell phone people... cell phone households might differ from landline households, you can kind of see them leaning towards Clinton because cell phone users tend to be younger, or I should say the cell phone users without landlines tend to be younger, more mobile, and less wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
The other poll was the American Research Group, the ARG poll, and I have to be honest, I've worked fairly hard to discover something about their methodology, and it's really not very clear to me how they're conducting their polls. They are polling in almost every state. They're out there a lot. They haven't had a great record. Nate Silver on 538 hasn't given their polls a lot of credibility. But yet, when they're aggregated in, they also have a 24-point lead for Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And then Monmouth University had a poll that had Clinton by 13 points.
Much closer,
and with the margin of error, it really made it, you know, you could have said, because they had about a six-point margin of error, could have said, well, it's a dead heat, you know, I mean, that's as close as it comes.
Now, we're going to get back to margin of error in just a second, but I'm also looking at the Real Clear Politics list of 2016 polls, and one thing I noticed, and maybe this should have been a tip-off, there was a Fox Mitchell poll that... Sundays was 37-point spread in favor of Mrs. Clinton.
Up.
And then by Monday, 27 points. And that seems to me a pretty volatile situation.
Yeah.
And would that reflect the quality of the group they're choosing to sample?
Yeah, well, again, we don't know much about the group that they're choosing to sample. But the both of them, if you look at the dates, they're both one-day polls. And you could have wild swings on any given day, and they did. The fact that it seemed to close up a bit would be interesting to note, except that you also saw them with a bigger leads earlier on for Clinton, and they swung all over the place, I should say.
We're talking with Rich Clark, who is from the Castleton Polling Institute, and we're talking about polling and survey research science and what goes into these things. And we've been talking about the polls that predicted that Hillary Clinton would win Michigan last week, and trying to get our heads around the things that go into survey science and what could make a poll come out so wackily wrong. If you have a question for Rich, give us a call at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. What is it? I know a lot of folks are a little skeptical of the idea that you could pick, say, 1,500 people out of the entire electorate of the United States and come up with anything like close to what the real swing of opinion would be. Why does that work?
Well, the science on that is when you work in a realm of large numbers. As long as your sample is unbiased, you can go with about 1,000 on a nationwide poll and have a representative sample within about 5 percentage points of the real true value for any statistic.
Now, by unbiased, you don't mean people with no opinions.
No, yes. I mean, whenever we try to determine who should be part of the poll, we bias it in some way or another. So using random sampling techniques, we end up taking our bias out of it.
Now, if I remember my grad studies right, the idea of doing a random sample is first you get a list of everybody in the group that you want, whose opinion you want to know about.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody in that group has an equal chance of being chosen to give their actual opinion, right?
Oh, yes.
That's a true random sample.
It doesn't have to be an equal chance, but there has to be a known
chance. Yeah, well, that was where I was going with this next, which is it's very hard to do that in the real world, isn't
That's
it?
That's right.
For reasons you just mentioned, for example, about the cell phones. If you're going to use phone calls to collect these opinions and you choose to use only landline phones, you're only going to be able to sample from the crowd of folks that only have landline phones or that do have landline phones, which does not necessarily.
Diminishing.
Right. Yep. And
Absolutely.
It doesn't include significant chunks of folks. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So,
absolutely. And that's been growing over time. In Vermont now, we know it's about 30% of our households are cell phone only. And we're one of the lower ratios of that.
Mm-hmm.
Across the state, it's approaching 50%.
Mm.
I mean, across the nation, excuse me.
Hey, we got a caller with a question here. Hang on now.
Yeah,
Rich, Tom from Williston. You got a question for Rich Clark?
Yes, a couple questions, actually quick ones. I'm wondering if an early conclusion to the Republican side of the ballot would have a significant effect on swing voters on the other side, and whether he thinks that's going to play out negatively or positively for one of those, you know, Bernie or Hillary. And the other quick question is the amount of anger that's in this year's campaign, does that play a factor in the way, you know, people are voting from, you know, shooting from the hip when they vote, or it's not as thoughtful? You know, that's basically the couple questions I have.
Okay, let me see if I got that right. You want to know if an early decision or arriving at a decision on one side is going to have an impact on the other side's polling? And then you're also concerned about the amount of anger that you see at play in the elections, in the primary elections, and wondering if that has an effect. What do you think?
Right. Well, in the open primary states where a voter is free to choose to vote in either the Democratic or the Republican primary, we know that the times when it's sewn up on one side or the other, the more dynamic election becomes a greater focus, and we'll have a lot more crossover voters there. Makes it a lot more unpredictable, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what we're doing when we're polling for unlikely voters for these horse race polls is we're projecting to a population that doesn't yet exist.
How so?
We don't know exactly who's going to be voting on it any given election. So we have to make a lot of assumptions about who is going to show up for the polls in each primary based on past elections.
So, and this is what we were talking about earlier when you're making the big list, the frame of people from whom you're going to choose poll respondents, correct?
That's right. And then to say, well, we know that in a primary, turnout's going to be lower than it will be in a general election. So we have to take with a little bit of skepticism. And by the way, for those callers who are skeptical of polls, I want it be very clear. They should be.
Mm-hmm.
I am. This is not it's a science that is subject to a lot of variability. We should expect 1 in 20 polls to be wildly off. That's you remember that from your stat classes,
sure
that we're
do.
Only operating with a 95% confidence level.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we've only had our, maybe we've had our one, who knows?
that's always the possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when what he's suggesting about the when one side is sewn up, yeah, I think we then tend to see a lot of volatility on the other side because you'll have voters who aren't typically voting in that primary.
We thank you, caller, for your call. We have another question coming in. Ron from Northfield, do you have a question for Rich?
It's Don.
Oh, Don, sorry.
Yes. this margin of error? Is it the statistical deviation or a standard deviation, or what is it?
That's an excellent question.
Statistical viewpoint.
Go ahead, Rich.
Well, it's the equivalent of a standard deviation, except it's not standardized. It's subject to whatever sort of sample size we're working with. So,
and we want to back up a little bit for folks who don't know what a standard deviation really signifies in terms of numbers. We're talking about a measure of how much swing there is. I mean, how much variability there is in a group of responses.
That's right. And so in a perfect world where we have an infinite number of samples, we use something called standard deviation to say we know that 65% of all cases are going to be within one standard deviation of the true mean, and 95% are going to be within about two standard deviations of the true mean. Well, when we get into the real world, those, rather than standard deviations, we apply numbers to those. So the margin of error, when I said that there's a 6-point margin of error, we know that the true value is going to be within 6 percentage points.
Either side,
that's right. Okay.
So in other words, if we saw, let's just take, for example, the Ohio Democratic Quinnipiac poll that's just out this morning,
mm-hmm.
and we see Clinton with 51% and Sanders with 46% of their respondents, and let's just say it was a standard deviation of, say, 3 percentage points.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that means that Clinton's total could be anywhere from 51 minus 3 to 51 plus 3.
That's right.
And Sanders could be anywhere from 46 minus 3 to 46 plus 3.
And they could be tied at 49% for all we know.
Yep. It could easily happen that it would fall, that those two sort of either side ranges would overlap each other.
That's
and
right.
You would have no clear way of knowing who was really, really ahead.
That's right.
I hope that answers your question. We are talking with Rich Clark from the Castleton Polling Institute, and we're talking about survey science and polls. And we have Rich, who's been very patient, on the line from Huntington. Are you still there, Rich?
Good morning. Yes.
Good morning. You have a question?
Given that most of the polls are run by colleges, universities, and journalistic concerns, I'm going to go way out on a limb and assume that most of the people involved personally are on the toward the left end of the political spectrum, and I'm always going to assume that there's going to be some level of bias involved in the people running these polls for that reason. And given what happened in Detroit, in the Michigan, some of the polls that came out there who were, you know, had serious egg on their face, is it possible? I mean, I hate to play the cynic here, but I've always assumed that there are polls out there that are not meant to gauge public opinion, but are meant to fabricate data and steer public opinion. And do you have any comment on that?
That's a good question.
A lot of the media polls came to life, the New York Times, CBS, ABC in the 1970s, because prior to that they had to rely on the internal polls, the campaign polls. And they were publishing those. And campaigns aren't dumb. They would release the polls that were going to benefit them, and they would conceal and hide the polls that wouldn't. And that's when media polling got underway. The university polling really took off for that same reason, in that we didn't think the media necessarily were had the true goal of measuring public opinion. You know, media tends to seek the good story.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a poll's not very exciting, that's not going to get a big story. And if it, in fact, is one of those outliers that causes a lot of commotion, then that's going to be the story.
Rich from Huntington, thank you for an excellent question. And Rich down there in Castleton, what Rich from Huntington was saying also hints at another potential source of what we would call bias, not statistical bias, not numerical bias, such as we were discussing when we talked about samples, but that is the way the questions are worded. You can generate very particular results by the way you word your questions. Is that fair?
I think it's fair. Now, when we're talking about the horse race, which we've been talking about, we're pretty much all relying on the same question. If the primaries were held today, and you know, first having screened people to see if they're voting in the Democratic primary or the Republican primary, you would say to them, if the Democratic primary were being held today, would you vote for Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders? And on the other side, they would do the same thing if the Republican primary were held today and run through that list of candidates. So there's not a lot of variation on that. But it comes back to this, the transparency initiative that I spoke to before.
Mm-hmm.
I think callers should be skeptical. I hope they're not cynical, but skeptical at least. And any credible pollster should be have all of their methodology out there so you can look at the questions. And any reasonable person can identify bias in a question.
Mm-hmm.
And often questions are worth discussing, and we have to take into account where we might have put our own biases in there. So I think having polling organizations that are transparent, that show what their question wording is, that talk about the question order so that you could see, you know, did they set up this question with a red herring or some question that would lead you to a certain response prior to that, that should all be plain to anybody who's interested in delving into it.
Rich Clark is my guest. He's the director of the Castleton Polling Institute. We're talking about survey research and polling science. Rich, I have one more question for you, which is, what do you think folks are doing differently this week, given the wild result we heard last week?
I hope nothing.
Okay.
I expect that the organizations such as Quinnipiac and Monmouth and Marist and I just listed all the colleges I know, but also CBS and their YouGov poll and these others are going to continue to use their same methods. And if they change, I hope that's made very, very clear.
Now, why do you say that?
Because I don't think there's a general problem with the science of polling. We have to understand that each poll is a snapshot. And in a very volatile situation where decisions are being made about who to vote for on the day of election, there is no poll that's going to predict that. That's an unpredictable situation. But when we have elections where people are settling earlier, like they do in the general election, then the polling and the methods that we have are going to continue to do fine. If you look, you know, back to New Hampshire, you look at what we saw in the Republican side in Michigan, the polls haven't been off a whole lot. We tend to focus and raise the alarms where they are off, but by and large, I think Michigan, had the one poll, the Monmouth poll, that was off, but not so far without in the margin of error. And then you have to say, well, campaigns matter. Sanders was there, and Sanders' people were turning out the voters. They had time to change it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Rich Clark. We may be calling on you again as we get closer to November or even a little bit later on in the primary season, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
That would be great. Rich Clark is the director of the Castleton Polling Institute, and he's been our guest here on Open Mic this morning talking about survey research and polling science. We'll be back with more Open Mic right after these words. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic here on WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name and I'm with you until 11 o'clock this morning. We were just chatting with Rich Clark from the Castleton Polling Institute. What do you think about that? What do you think about that conversation? What do you think about the polling? Have you been called? Have you been part of the polling that's been going on? Have you been attacked by the robocaller? Have you talked to a real live person? We'd love to hear from you. Some people complain that they're suspicious of polls because the polls never call them, well, just like the Nielsen ratings. Tom, have you ever been contacted by one of these guys? I wonder. I know I have been repeatedly this season, but how about you?
Well, I have, but I usually have such ridiculous answering machine messages that they sometimes laugh and hang up or just don't know what to make of it. I don't have that, "Hi, you've reached Tom." I just have these long I'm notorious for it. So
uh-huh.
I guess I tripped them up. But I have heard from the Trump campaign. They had that robocall thing they were doing. Well, I've heard the Nielsen's and
anybody call you and ask you to poll you, ask you who you were going to vote for?
Nothing really like that. Just more that they called, we're doing this thing. Maybe call us back and By the time I get home, about 8 o'clock.
Oh, no, you get a long day.
I feel like it. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is something. You know, one thing we didn't ask Rich about, and maybe as we get closer, it'll be to the conventions, it'll be worth giving him another callback. These head-to-head matchups, if the general election were held today, and the candidates were, say, Trump and Clinton, who would you vote for? If the candidates today were Kasich and Sanders, who would you vote for? Those are intriguing. I wonder how meaningful they are.
Yeah, well, I liked the guest you just had on, Rich Clark. That was
mm-hmm.
his name.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I was just honest that, well, you know, often you don't hear the pollsters necessarily being honest that this is just somewhat theoretical. He was, you know, and you should be suspicious of it, but I guess it's just a sampling.
Yeah, I guess suspicious isn't necessarily the right word. You shouldn't swallow it whole. You know, it's important to understand
right.
how they get to these numbers because they do have a value, but they really only have a good, you know, a useful value if you understand how they were derived, because then you can put it into context in a certain way.
Yeah, just kind of a preview.
Yeah.
So
back in the day,
happen. They
used to have to go around and just ask people, knock on doors.
Door to door, huh?
Then came the telephone, and that created problems because not everybody could afford a telephone. So you only got folks who could afford a telephone. And as Rich himself made clear, that the polls that we saw coming out this morning were calls made yesterday afternoon. And who do you think is home yesterday afternoon? Not me.
Was that nice weather?
Oh, gosh,
it was nice to be out and about.
It sure was, yeah. So you have to ask those questions and you have to be skeptical. And as he pointed out, he was talking about the Transparency Initiative. I wonder if they've got a website. We should find that and put a link to that up there. The Transparency Initiative, that's right, to lay bare the methodology behind some of these figures.
Yeah.
So we're looking for your calls this morning. What do you think? What do you think about the polling? What do you think about the election? What do you think about the candidates that we're all being offered this year? Or what do you think about something else? If you want to go off the election for a bit, that's fine with us as well. We've got plenty of room and plenty of time for your calls. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. That's toll free. We're going to take your calls right up until the top of the hour. Then we'll have a little bit of a news break and check in with our friends down at Talk Media News in Washington and see what's the buzz down there this morning as we approach Super Tuesday number 2. Roger Hill is on the line. Hi, Roger.
Hey, good morning to you, Hester.
Good morning.
Yeah, I was on vacation, and we were kind of blown away, but I don't know if anybody else got these, but this wasn't a poll, but this was a message on my machine from white supremacists voting for Trump. Was that widespread?
I wonder. I don't know. I'd be interested to hear if other folks had gotten those kinds of calls as well. Now, you're right in central Vermont, right?
Worcester.
Worcester, which is, everybody knows, a hotbed of you know, white nationalism.
Uh-huh. It's news to me.
Yeah, news to everybody. That's pretty wild. What did they say?
Well, I think it was a local guy, or at least a Vermont guy. There might have been a couple news stories about this, but I never really heard all the details. But it was, don't vote for Cruz and Rubio because they were impure and not white.
Mm.
And it was all, you know, vote for Trump. And we used to, and I can't remember the guy's name, but the answer machine had it. It was kind of garbled.
Yeah,
but it was definitely a robocall. It was very much one of those things.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, we need to say that a candidate cannot control who supports them.
Right.
You never know who's going to show up on your side.
Right. I don't know how far that goes with the current things that are going on. Kind of going from polling, but. I'm seeing that today, or I guess it was yesterday, that Ann Coulter is pushing. She wants to see violence at Trump rallies against the protesters. From what I'm reading here, more violence from Trump supporters upon the left.
This is crazy.
Well, this is coming right from her. So if the people are looking, I mean, besides what Trump says, and then besides, you know, some of the supporters are coming out and saying those things. I think it's. To me, anybody who incites violence is running for the president of the United States is immediately disqualified and, you know, full stop.
Mm-hmm. I think you're not alone in that opinion. I don't understand why some of these remarks are not, you know, actionable in terms of, you know, getting arrested and being hauled into court on charges. It just seems to me that some of this stuff is definitely over the line of hollering.
And what I understand is Trump is either flirting with or he's decided to pay the legal fee of the guy who
he did say that he would do that. I don't know whether it was an off-the-cuff remark, but he's now made it more than once.
And wouldn't that basically give the green light for more of this?
I wish that we had a lawyer out there who knew this stuff better than I do, certainly, who would call in and help us understand how to think about this, exactly that question.
Back to polling, I'll just end on this note. I think there's definitely a bias against Bernie Sanders in all polls because of the cell phone issue and the younger crowd.
Well, it is also possible to include the cell phone crowd in your polling, in your sampling. So certainly the things that we've been able to read about the polls that were done in Michigan last week, they were overlooking that chunk.
Yeah, I suspect, looking at numbers we crunch all the time, it's all statistical and it's the same kind of thing, standard deviations, etc. If I was to use a forecast based on just the regular polling that I'm seeing, forecast would be pretty lousy because some of the basis of the trends being so widely distributed in such a short period of time. But here again, I mean, the atmospheric fluid dynamics is kind of the same thing of, you know, with people and maybe undercounting some and overcounting others.
Right, so. And also that element of not being 100% random or not being predictable, but not being quite random either.
Yeah, poor skill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, Roger. Thanks a lot for your call. You're listening to Open Mic here on WDEV. We're going to stop for news in just a few minutes. 244-1777 is the number. And toll-free also 1-877-291-8255. Jot those down and think about calling us on the other side. And let's hear what the news of the day is going to be. And we'll also be stopping to talk a bit with our folks, our friends down in Washington at Talk Media News. We'll hear what the action is down there this morning. Don't forget, coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, we've got Bill Sayre. He's in this morning with Rob Roper. And they're going to be talking about the consolidation of school governance in Vermont, Act 46. And the question they're asking this week, or this morning rather, is will this sometimes hurt public schools as well as families who lose school choice? That's Rob Roper with Bill Sayre this morning on Common Sense Radio, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute. And that's coming up today, as it does every weekday, at 11 o'clock. We have a couple of minutes before our news break.
When I noticed when Roger was away, he was in Hawaii, that story about the Trump and the supremacists was out there, that was going on. And I actually got one of those calls. So the same
Did
thing,
you really?
It was garbled. And I knew it was coming. If I didn't know it was coming, I was like Roger, and I was away, and I came home, and what is this all about? So,
it's a little scary.
Yeah,
it's more than a little. I mean,
yeah,
it just doesn't feel like the Vermont that I live in.
Well, the national stuff is impacting the local stuff.
I think that's true. We are kind of a live and let live place. We are kind of. I live in Vermont and do what I want, and this apparently is what some folks want to do, and they're coming out of the shadows, emboldened by a lot of the rhetoric that.
I look forward to when the legislature is over to some of the political races getting going so we can just hear different things instead of what's going on nationally.
True. Yeah, so. Yeah, it's pretty wild, and it's going to get wilder, I'm afraid, at least until the conventions are over. But you out there, you are listeners, you are the voice of common sense, you are the voice of reason to many of us, and we certainly hope to hear from you on the other side of our news break. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. We are going to stop for news. Reminder that you're listening to WDEV in Waterbury at 5:50 a.m., also broadcasting from 96.1 FM in Warren, Vermont, 96.5 FM in Barrie, Vermont, and worldwide, of course, on the Internet. Stay tuned for news, and we'll be back on the other side. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic. Hester Fuller is my name, and I'm with you every Monday morning from 9 until 11. As you know, about this time, we look forward every week to checking in with our friend down in Washington, Victoria Jones from Talk Media News. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
What I hear on the news is that President Obama basically ignored the shenanigans on the road this week and was holed up with advisors picking out Supreme Court nominees. Is that right? Is that true?
Yes. I mean, he took some shots. He had some fun. He took some shots. He took some shots at Trump steaks and Trump wine, actually, at a Democratic fundraiser. He had some very funny lines about that, and he also once again talked about the rise of Trump and what that was about, and that was kind of interesting. But yes, he's been holed up with his briefing books like a good young man, and he apparently, according to both Reuters and Politico that have been reporting on this, I think others too, but they're the ones who've really been out on this, has narrowed it down to three names. They're all federal appeals court judges. And Reuters is even going so far as to say that he could make the announcement today. Politico did not go that far in its article, but is saying this week. So everybody's sort of on tenterhooks. Of course, there are two things coming up. If he makes the announcement today, then that's ahead of the primaries tomorrow. And if he makes the announcement this week and not today, it still would be ahead of his Cuba trip at the weekend.
It really is a strange calculus, especially this year, exactly when various moves are going to come. Now, one thing about federal appeals court judges, they have already been vetted through the Senate, have they not?
Yes, they have. And the ones, for example, the three names are Sri Srinivasan, Merrick Garland, and Paul Watford. I would have to go back and look at how Garland and Watford were confirmed. But Sri Srinivasan, for example, was confirmed unanimously in 2013. So he has been looking at judges that were that all breezed through the Senate, basically.
Even
those that didn't make the final cut of three, that we're told is in the final cut of three anyway. He could surprise us.
Well, that Sri Srinivasan is the one name that I've heard before in the context of this. So it will be interesting. Now, once we get through Super Tuesday number two, where will the spotlight in Washington shift next, do you think?
I think people will try to figure out, they'll look at the delegate count on the Republican side in particular to see, did Donald Trump get enough that he can start to look at sewing this thing up? And that will depend on whether he actually won Ohio and Florida. Governor John Kasich is neck and neck with him in Ohio, which actually is not that great for Kasich because he was ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're coming into the end, and so sometimes you see a rush going one way or a rush going the other way. We don't know. And in Florida, well, of course, Marco Rubio is thinking, well, you know, I'm going to win. Well, if he does, then he will astound everybody.
Yes, it seems that way. And he's also asked his supporters in Ohio, I guess, to support Mr. Kasich.
He has. And Kasich hasn't returned the favor and asked his supporters in Florida to support Rubio.
Mm, yeah, that's notable.
Yeah.
Well, it just gets more and more interesting, doesn't it? My gracious. We'll have to see where we stand next week. And thank you very much. Victoria Jones from Talk Media News, who joins us every Monday right after our 10 o'clock news break. We will be back with more of your phone calls in just a minute. This is Open Mic. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic. Hester Fuller is my name, and I'm with you right up to the top of the hour at 11 o'clock this morning here on WDEV. Today, we're looking for your calls. We're looking to see what you're interested in chatting about this morning. 244-1777 or call us toll-free at 1-877-291-8255. We've been talking about the elections and poll results and primaries. We just heard on the news that the president spent the weekend squirreled away with his briefing books to figure out who he might name as a nominee for Supreme Court justice. Lots of things going on locally as well. Times Argus reporting this morning that deaths from heroin and fentanyl are climbing. What do you think about that? Is Vermont on the right track treating these addictions as diseases? What else do you think would be a good idea to add to the arsenal of tools to help combat the problems that we're seeing with opiate abuse in the state of Vermont? Give us a call, 244-1777, 1-877-291-8255, or give us a call about whatever else you're interested in. What's on your mind this morning as the work week opens? How was your weekend? Beautiful weather, especially Saturday and Sunday. My goodness, gorgeous, warm weather, chance to get outside and start in on the spring chores. Shearing, I know, is going on in various spots. Sap running where you are? Like to hear about it. Like to hear if you boiled. Have you boiled yet? How is it looking? And how? What do you think is going to happen with the season? What do you think is going to happen with the prices? I'd be interested in hearing from you if you've been doing any of those Vermont spring chores. Phone numbers once. Oh, we. Oh, Jim from Roxbury is on the line. Jim, what's new?
Good morning. I listened to the your conversation in regards to the polls, mm-hmm. And I just got the tail end of it. I was curious. Did he mention how they were funded, or who funds them?
No, you know, we didn't go there. I know from my own experience that university polling places are typically funded through grants from, you know, whoever supports. But I don't know if that's true at Castle, from who support the Research Institute, not necessarily who support one side or the other of a result, and that most sort of ethical polling operations steer away from corporate support from people who might benefit from the result going one way or another. But no, we didn't actually get a chance we didn't get to that question, and I'm sorry that you weren't near a phone, because that would have been a really good one.
The other, I've gotten a few phone calls, and one of them was from, I don't know who it was, but who may have been a college student, because he wanted me to vote for Bernie because he wanted free education, mm-hmm. which is, and he also wanted marijuana to be mm-hmm. legalized. So I started to say I'm not so sure that's a great idea, and he hung up on me. So
that he hung up on you.
Yeah, he mm-hmm. didn't want to hear my side, of course. But, the other thing on the whole opiate situation, I think it's a huge concern, and I think it's most people know you can get almost anything anywhere, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure, and I'm very concerned, and I know there isn't always total connection, but we start legalizing marijuana, my feeling is we're sending the wrong message to kids. You know, and I'm sure I'm in the minority, but that, and I just think it's, you know, it was illegal for a reason, now it's legal, and they're driving, and I'm sure they can, I get concerned, because,
yep.
And I don't know that it's totally factual, but I just tend to think that one thing leads to another.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there isn't.
Well, I mean, I think you may feel like you're in the minority, but I don't think you're a minority of one. I think a lot of people share your view and share your concern about this, and it would be interesting to hear. Do you have thoughts about what would be and you know what? You just pointed out something, too. I meant to mention this. The irony of this issue coming up just as we are struggling with another situation involving drugs and drug abuse. Do you have thoughts about the approach to the opiate situation as a disease rather than a criminal thing, getting people treatment instead of incarceration?
Yeah. Obviously, I think they need treatment, because they've gotten to a point where I'm not sure they can even control their behavior. And I think what it does, it drives them, if they need to pay for their addiction, then it drives to the criminal side. And again, I'm not an expert on this at all, but so to answer your question, I don't think it helps to put them incarcerate them, mm-hmm. by any means. I think that almost perpetuates the problem in mm-hmm. some cases. On the other hand, if they've gone and done a criminal kind of offense, we can't necessarily look the other way either. I haven't been a victim to that, but it'd be interesting to hear someone who's been a victim of an offense from someone who's, who knows, maybe robbing a house because they need money to buy.
Well, it would be interesting. I agree with
you.
And Jim, don't worry about being an expert. We don't have experts. What we have are thoughtful people here, mm-hmm. and you certainly qualify. So feel free to give us another call another time.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling today. Skip up in Craftsbury, you're on the line.
Yes, Esther.
Hi, Skip.
I am an independent voter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an old guy who's voted Republican and Democrat both ways. I was listening to the radio the other night, and I was listening to Donald Trump in a news program, and I got chills up my back. I heard him say, throw them out mm-hmm. in the cold, and don't give them their coats. Let them freeze.
It gave you chills.
In 1938, I came home from school at lunchtime, and my parents were listening to an idiot rave.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to throw them out. We're going to burn their books.
Mm.
If we don't remember history, we are doomed to live it over again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old enough that it's not going to bother me that much one way or the other. But I have so many grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And about your other thing, criminal drugs.
Yeah.
I just lost a granddaughter.
Yeah.
And she'd been through 10 years of rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
A wonderful kid. I don't think we treat the sellers harshly enough.
You know, I was wondering when someone was going to take that conversation in that direction.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
We let them get away with murder.
Mm-hmm.
Arrest them 5, 6, 7 times for selling opiates, for bringing it up from Brooklyn or Boston or wherever, and usually selling it to our children on the streets. That should be a major crime. I'm sorry, I'm shouting.
No, that's perfectly all right. I think you have strong feelings and for very good reason.
I'm in tears over it.
I know.
Wow.
Yep, and it's been very tough for you and for your family, particularly this story strikes home. And I really appreciate your being willing to share that with us and to give us a call here this morning about that. How about other listeners out there? Do you share Skip's concern that the dealers, the pushers, aren't getting treated harshly enough, that maybe that's where some focus needs to be applied or increased? Give us a call here at 244-1777. Or 1-877-291-8255. Rob is calling from North Carolina. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. You listening to us on the internet down there?
Yes, we do. We can even get you on the phone way down here.
Wow.
I guess anywhere in America, maybe worldwide.
So what's on your mind?
Very interesting.
What's on your mind this morning?
Well, a lot. That's on my mind is on your mind, and a lot of people who would like a civil political discourse. We're not getting it, are we?
No, we are not getting a civil political discourse.
No, and we need it. And, I mean, this, you know, I'm disappointed in Trump. I'm disappointed in Barack Obama when he had his beer summit. He made a big deal out of that. I mean, he brought the cop and the supposed abused a black professor, and they had a beer summit. Where is the president right now? And it's interesting that you said squirreled away somewhere with more important matters that probably aren't going to lead anywhere. Where is his leadership right now? Because he needs to step up, really, don't you think?
Well, I wonder what my listeners think about that. I am not sure what I think about that, but that question certainly has crossed my mind.
I'm sure it has. And another thing, if you don't mind, how do you feel about Marco Rubio?
How do I feel about him?
Yeah, how do you feel about him?
I think he's a nice young man.
Nice young man. You think he has the experience and the gravitas to be president?
I don't think so, but, you know, I'm just one person.
No, neither do I. So, you know, Marco does have some good points, and I think he's an intelligent person. And he was speaking to George Stephanopoulos yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And in that conversation, Marco stepped up and said, you know, we all have to look at ourselves. We all have to reflect here. And I'm not going to quote him, but in so many words, he says, the media should look at itself and its role in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Friday night after the North Carolina, and that's where I am right now, the North Carolina rally here about 40 miles away.
Uh-huh.
And when the 78-year-old man, frustrated, you could see his face, and he lunged out, not with a fist, not with knuckles, but with a forearm, and was just so exasperated that he can't sit and listen to someone that he'd like to hear from. And these crowds come in, and they push and they shove, and he can't listen. So, but, you know, that Friday night, we watched, my wife and I watched a number of stations, and particularly NBC, and they must have shown that forearm slam, which didn't even knock him off balance. I counted 10 times, and it was like in repetition. It would show like a 5-minute little clip, and then followed by another 5-minute little clip, from a different angle. Do you think that's responsible TV journalism?
Well, I think that gesture became emblematic of something we're seeing an awful lot of, happening. We're seeing a lot of that kind of stuff, and it's
emblematic. Yes, but what is the net effect in trying to get to this civilized political discourse, I'll ask you.
Well, I share your core point, if I understand it correctly, which I think the media does have an awful lot to answer for, feeding oxygen to this kind of thing. I don't know whether we would agree on that specific instance, but I do agree with you that I think the media, we're just so far from the days of Edward R. Murrow or even the journalism that I thought I was entering when I picked up this as a profession back in the late 70s.
And I like listening to you. You're very rational, intelligent, and I think you have you offer a good voice to Vermonters and even down here in North Carolina.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I think you probably don't know me that well then if you think I'm always rational, but I sure like having you on the other side of the speaker. That's good. And Rob, I hope you will call us again. Get your wife to call us too. We'd like to know what she thinks about current events and what's going on, and I really appreciate your call. We do have another call that I need to jump to right now. Bill from Barrie, you're on the air.
Okay, about this drug thing. First of all, you mentioned, should the drugs, people have the drugs, be considered as a disease, of course. However, they should, in order to be cured of a disease like this, the people that have this, should accept the responsibility of how they got into this mess in the first place. Many, many of us, I'm a senior, so have things that have happened to us, you know, like cancer and things, that we had no control over that it would happen or not. But these people, most of them, were doing recreational drugs, starting with marijuana. That brings to another subject. Last week, Mike Smith had a lady on who was a doctor. She brought up all kinds of statistics and medical information that showed that, like Colorado and Washington State, statistically, there has been an increase in drug problems. I'm not going to go into all of them because she's the expert. I don't know if you heard that.
I did not hear that program. I've heard about it from a number of folks.
You've got to talk to Mike about it and listen to all those things. And if the legislators, I was a legislator and I was listening to that stuff, there's no way I would be voting for legalizing marijuana, especially with all this other drug problems. But the main point would be, again, taking responsibility for your own actions. And I think that's a lot of problems throughout our whole system of everything people do.
Well,
do they take responsibility?
Let me ask you a question, Bill. I'm going to push back just a little bit. I my family, and I think just about every family within earshot, has been touched in some way by this problem. One of the things I see happening in this problem is that that's exactly a piece of the person that gets eroded with the addiction. The ability to do that, to quote-unquote take responsibility is the way you put it, but the physical capacity, the emotional capacity to step away from it and hold yourself away from it, that's kind of exactly what this problem erodes. What do you think we can do about that?
Well, people have tried. I mean, you say, I was at a meeting, okay, and it was a public meeting, and I asked how many people in this room have a family that have not been affected by drugs.
Mm-hmm.
One couple, this was about 60 people, one couple mm-hmm. raised their hands. I wasn't one of them.
Mm-hmm.
This is, everybody has been affected by this, and the family, for the most part, ours is, are perfectly willing to help as much as they can, and have these people go to health clinics to help them, and they don't do it. They either go to the clinic, sneak away from it when they're partway through the drug treatment because it's too tough.
Well, you know what? That is, isn't it, what makes it so heartbreaking, because there are people standing all around wanting to help, willing to help, wanting to do anything to save this person that they care about, and it just, the pieces don't fall together, the gears don't mesh, and we lose people, and it's heartbreaking.
There's a second point to this, and the question you brought up. What about the people who deal the drugs, provide the drugs?
Mm-hmm.
That's what, I will say the time. They haven't had penalties harsh enough, in my opinion,
uh-huh.
the people who do that. But, and I will even say this. I hate to say this.
What?
but we have been asked to get somebody's desperate, family member is desperate and wants money because they're having to, you know, not to do with drugs, and we've given them money and found out that they've used that money for drugs.
I think that your experience is not unique, and I'm very sorry to hear that you had that happen to you as well. A lot of us have. I have a number of callers who are backed up on the line here, Bill, so I'm going to have to let you go, but I thank you very much for your thoughts, and I hope you will give us a call here again on Open Mic. Peter from Waitsfield, you're on the air.
Good morning. I want to reference your earlier caller who drew some parallels between Trump and Hitler, and if we aren't doomed to understand and learn from our history, then it will repeat itself. And Hitler rose to power because Germany was under some severe economic austerity measures, and we, for different reasons, have been under a similar set of circumstances, which those conditions are ripe for a demagogue to rise to power. But we're also doomed to repeat our history in our drug war, because it's instructive to look at our past with regards to alcohol prohibition. There was an epidemic of alcoholism during prohibition among two groups that had never seen it before, namely women and children. Children were often employed by the bootleggers to look out for cops, and they were often paid with booze. To the question as to whether or not, what's the message we send to children? Well, you know, marijuana, let's face it, you know, there's a lot of debate about how safe it is, but it's arguably safer than alcohol in many regards. And for some, it's a life-giving medicine. And Sanjay Gupta recently did a story on the high CBD strains of marijuana being used for children with severe seizure disorders,
mm-hmm.
and it was remarkably effective. But actually, it's been shown to treat PTSD. But these young men and women who have gone abroad to serve our country come back, and the VA can't prescribe marijuana for their symptoms because it's not recognized by the federal government. Mm-hmm. Really, we ought to change it from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2.
And that's just loosening up the...
That hasn't happened yet.
Yep.
Is absurd. But I'll wrap it up by saying anyone who's concerned about the message sent to children should do some research on Holland and Portugal. Holland hasn't even legalized marijuana. They've just tolerated it. Yet Holland has some of the lowest youth use of marijuana and also opiates in all of Europe. The ever pragmatic Dutch have effectively made marijuana use boring and passe to their children.
That is certainly an approach we have not tried in this country yet, and I think that does bear some looking into. Peter from Waitsfield, thank you so much for your call. Ruth from Sheldon, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm very disappointed with the media coverage of the primaries, and I want to say that most of the debates have been on cable TV, and I don't have cable TV, and I don't expect your listening audience to feel sorry for me, but there are people out here who aren't even able to watch and to hear about some of the candidates, and they're already out of the race, and we never even had a chance to hear one word from them. And I think that's disgraceful.
I think that's really frustrating, too. And I think that doesn't do much to inform an entire electorate, does it?
Right, right. I was really interested in Rand Paul, and I liked, I can't think of his name right now. Also, last week, Nancy Reagan died,
mm-hmm.
and I have a picture of Ronald Reagan on my bulletin board. And he has a quote, and I'd like to just say that to people because of something that was said on your show last week.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so here it is. If we ever forget that we are one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under.
That's
so,
well
thank
put.
You.
Thank you, Ruth, for calling in from Sheldon. Bill from Moortown, you're on Open Mic.
Yes, good morning, my dear.
This good morning. Bill.
Hey, I just heard Peter talk there from Waitsfield.
Mm-hmm.
I don't totally agree with him. I don't think that man has ever been in combat. I served 3 tours in Vietnam. I'm a retired Army Master Sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never smoked marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And I do use alcohol, but not to extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And I control myself, and also I do have PTSD from what I've been through.
Mm-hmm.
I think the United States and the VA ought to look at both situations, and I'm working on it with them. I am on the patient's representative board at White River, and we run into this problem quite often. And the biggest thing that there is that these, and God forgive them, these young fellas coming back, and God bless them, they don't get their drugs when they should. And it really bothers them.
Now, are you talking about the use of marijuana as a therapeutic agent for folks who...
Well, they're treating them for PTSD, these young fellas coming back from where they're coming from now, Pakistan, Iraq, or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And they need those drugs, and the thing of it is, the VA used to be able to mail them right out from White River. Now it has to go to Manchester and then back to the individuals. They're getting better on it, but it's just one of those things that takes time to...
Well, now, Bill, you can do me a favor here and educate me a little. Now, you're talking about when someone comes back and gets treatment at the VA hospital in White River,
yeah,
and there may be some drugs that they are prescribed and need to help deal with whatever issue they brought back.
Yes.
And they can't just walk away from the VA with a little supply of those. It has to, the prescription
they
has to be...
They can, but whenever they're prescribed, these people need them on their due date. You mm-hmm. know what I'm trying to say?
Okay, I get what
and
you're saying.
Then they're getting better with it, but they... With quite a while, we had a problem with them because once they... And it's not nothing to do with the VA. The postal system changed. And they had to go to Manchester, New Hampshire, and be shipped out of there because they're a controlled substance.
Well, you know what? I wonder why the system wouldn't have adapted to that. I mean, that's a change.
It has now.
It has now. Okay, that's good.
I know they're doing the best they can down there. I work hand-in-hand with the VA.
Tell me a bit about what you do with the VA.
I'm on the patient's representative board down there.
Uh-huh.
There's 2 of us, men, and there's 2 females. And we have a meeting every quarterly, or if we need to have one more than that, well, we can have it. They have the patient's representative board in-house every month.
And what's the role of the patient representative board?
Well, I get out and I get around and the different VAs, not the VAs, but the VFW, and you know, I'm a lifetime membership to the Hyde Park VFW.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people up there, and I go from there out through to Lancaster and around, and you'll be surprised what you run into these people, and especially the older females that hate to go to White River because of their military experience. And they have
I don't understand why that would make them hate to go to White River.
Well, the thing of it is, a lot of them have had difficulties in the military, sexual harassment and something to that effect.
Okay, so it's just the whole VA apparatus that they find.
But the thing of it is, a lot of these women do not realize the VA in White River has opened their own ladies' clinic. They can walk into their portion of the hospital. They never need to see a male. There's a female there to meet them, and they can take it from there.
You know, I have learned something today that I'm glad I know about now, Bill. I think I'm going to return to this topic in a future show, and so I thank you very much for calling today, and I hope you'll stay listening and call again with more good ideas. You are tuned to WDEV and you're listening to Open Mic. I'm Hester Fuller. I'm here until 11 o'clock this morning. I'm here every Monday from 9 until 11. At 11, of course, we have Common Sense Radio with Bill Sayre and Rob Roper. This week, the question they're asking on Monday morning, will school governance consolidation sometimes hurt public schools as well as families who lose school choice? Act 46, that's the topic this morning for Rob Roper and Bill Sayre on Common Sense Radio, coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute. We'll be back in just a minute after doing a little business. You are listening to Open Mic. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Hester Fuller and I'm with you until the top of the hour, which is just about 17 minutes away. I'm here every Monday from 9 until 11, taking your phone calls. What are you thinking about the news of the day? Boy, Tom, we've had some interesting calls this morning and some really good show ideas, I think. I think I really will pick up on Bill from Moortown's comments about the women's care down at the VA hospital down in White River. I think that would be an interesting program for a lot of folks.
Yeah, sounds like he's with that and some other topics, want to get the word out. So whatever we can do.
No, hopefully. I think that would be a really good thing to do. Yeah. And I think I will see if I can line somebody up to come and educate us all about that. What's on your mind out there? We have plenty of time to take your calls. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. This morning we've talked about the candidates, we've talked about polling, we've talked about the legalization of marijuana, we've talked about the changes in the we've talked about the rise in deaths from heroin and fentanyl, front page story on the Times Argus this morning. We've talked about a lot of different things, and we still want to talk about the things that you want to talk about. So give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind. What are the stories?
Go ahead. The bumper music that I played, sometimes it has a point. Today, that was Wildfire by Michael Martin Murphy, who turns 71 today.
71.
Yeah.
71 is like the new 27. Do you notice that? You know, 27, the 27 Club, which is when all the rock and rollers who were going to pop off early popped off, like Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix. And now the old guys are all popping off at 71. What's up with that?
Well, I think it's probably amazing for some of them that they've gone so far. They had Love and Life was probably their greatest sin, just a little too much, as was quoted in a tribute song to Johnny Cash recently. So I just think had they been a little healthier, and we would hope maybe Michael Martin Murphy was out on the range somewhere because he does a lot of that range music, but who knows,
and I'm just sorry they're not still here. And I wonder, you know, you say if they'd lived a little more conventionally, they might have lived a little longer, but I don't know if that would have been worth it.
Well, I mean, if you read some of those, like Johnny Cash and some of these folks that really abuse their bodies and talk about addictions, it's sad. It's too bad to see, but they looked old before their time for a reason. Too much fun, I think.
Yeah. And then we have the counterexample of all counterexamples, Mr. Keith Richards.
by any
insurance underwriter's chart, should have been dead about 15 years ago.
One of those situations where I had a family member who drank few fifths of whiskey, Irish whiskey, every couple days, and smoked a carton of cigarettes, and he lived to be 100. And just before he was 98, he said his physical, true story, and he said, you know, doctor, I don't know, should I be smoking and drinking this much? And he said, you know, if it's working for you at this point, but I'm sure the doctor would say, now, that's like one in a million or one in a thousand.
Well,
but
he seemed to have been the walking example, though. It's clear something was
doesn't work
something
for
was
everybody.
Preserving him.
Yep.
Maybe it was the hard stuff. Who knows? what it was.
Could have been.
Well, we're interested in your theories of how people manage to last as long as they do. Give us a call here at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. We've been talking about the things that people complain about quite a bit this morning, and justifiably so. But you know what? I'd sure love to hear some things I can be celebrating today. In addition to the lovely, gorgeous day we had on Saturday and the advent of spring, I'm getting pictures on my Facebook page of folks' crocuses popping up. Not in Vermont yet, but pretty soon. What's out there for you to celebrate today? I'd love to hear from you guys out there. If there's something you're celebrating, maybe it's a birthday, maybe it's some kind of a landmark event, maybe it's an anniversary of a landmark event, maybe you're sugaring, maybe you're boiling today for the first time. What are you celebrating? You got any lambs coming in? Have you started yet? Love to hear about that as well. Give us a call here at 244-1777, 1-877-291-8255. That's our toll-free number. Give us a call here on Open Mic. Oh, we have a caller coming in. I guess my buddy is going to is going to pick it up, and we'll see what they have in mind. Other things that I see coming in on the news this morning, apparently there's an effort down in Montpelier to get some more money for the Meals on Wheels plan, which is a really very valuable component in the overall state effort to combat hunger and malnutrition and the many health concerns that follow through from that. You got thoughts about that as well? Oh, we have a call from Lynn in Colchester. Lynn, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, it has absolutely nothing to do with any of the topics you've discussed thus far.
Oh, good.
However, we're about to begin our fifth season in Vermont, that being the construction season.
Uh-huh.
And given the recent tragedy in Middlebury, I would just like to ask folks that, you know, maybe you're a little bit inconvenienced, that you have to slow down for a work area, but please, please respect the signage. You get plenty of warning prior to entering a work zone. And, you know, maybe have some fun with it and go a little slower than requested.
There you go. Lynn, for our listeners who may not know what happened in Middlebury, you want to fill them in?
I got secondhand information, so I don't have all the details. But there was a flagger killed in Middlebury on Friday.
Yeah.
And I don't have all the details of how that happened, so I don't wish to.
No, I hear you. Yeah, and I didn't mean to put you on the spot that way, but that.
No, that's quite all right.
Terribly sad thing to have happen and so easily prevented if people would just take a moment, take their time, go slow. Whatever you're rushing to is still going to be there if you take an extra 3 minutes, so. Please.
An extra 3 minutes in the scheme of things?
That's right. That's a fact. So thank you very much, Lynn. I appreciate that reminder. A very timely reminder. Yes, indeed, our fifth season is upon us. I was going to bring up the Red Sox, but jeepers, you know, I don't know if I want to bring up the Red Sox. What do you think?
Why would you or why wouldn't you?
Because I love my Bohos, and they're having a little rugged beginning.
Well, but they don't. I mean, some of the years I think they won the World Series, the Grapefruit League, the spring stuff hasn't gone great. That's just kind of, it's experimentation. We got to wait until at least the All-Star break.
Why are the other teams' experiments working out so much better than ours?
They're just still wasting. You know, they're putting too much into it. The Red Sox.
Oh, they're going to peak early? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, the other guys are? I just, you know, knowing the Red Sox as we do, they tend to maybe have a strong start, fade out, then around the All-Star break is when it counts more. So.
Yep, and then as soon as it's all washed up, they come on really strong.
But they do raise the blood pressure. Here's a call, so I'll be right back with you.
Bohos, I've never had a season where my Bohos became my boohoos before opening day, but I just feel like that's coming on. Hoy, you're going to be able to listen to everything they do here on WDEV, and we can all mourn together. We can all celebrate together. Let's be optimistic. Let's look on the bright side and hope that they pull it out again this year. See what's going to happen. The Red Sox will be opening, gosh, within just a couple of weeks, I would imagine, be opening day. I'm not really sure about the schedule. Maybe somebody out there could fill me in and help me get my bearings on the opening of the baseball season. Won't be long. I used to live in Boston, and boy, that was always two celebrations. One was Truck Day. That's the day when they load up the equipment truck and pull out from Fenway and head south. You could draw quite a crowd for that giant tractor trailer. And then, of course, the next big celebration is opening day. Rick from Essex, you're on the air on Open Mic.
Good morning, Hester.
Good morning.
I've got a question. Kind of curious what your thoughts might be, or maybe those of other listeners who might want to call in.
Mm-hmm.
But talking about Donald Trump, there have been, you know, sort of comparisons that people have made or have spoken about Donald Trump as, you know, in reference to Hitler, and maybe even a caller this morning mentioned Mussolini. But those kinds of comparisons I've seen a few times recently, you know, in the media. And my curiosity is, why the comparison with Hitler and Mussolini, but you don't hear similar comparisons of Trump with either Stalin or Mao?
You think those are better analogies?
Well, I'm not sure that they're better analogies necessarily, but, I mean, I see all four people as being, you know, absolutely despicable, rulers.
Yeah.
And, it's just kind of curious that the references to Hitler and Mussolini, and absolutely, I haven't heard any references at all.
Yeah, well, you know, I haven't either, come to think of it, and it is kind of a curious question. I know that the references to Hitler and Mao, certainly there are things in his gestures and his rhetoric that echo things we once heard. You know, maybe, what do you think? Do you think maybe that's part of it?
That might be part of it. It might be communism, you know, communist rulers are viewed in, for some reason, in a more favorable light than, Hitler and Mussolini were.
Than fascists?
Because of ideology. Mm. My understanding, and, you know, and I'm, you know, am by no means an expert, but my understanding
you're a thoughtful person,
that
that's what counts
that
here.
The Nazi Party was basically a socialistic party. So I have, you know, seen at least one article some time ago, you know, pointing out that, you know, in many ways the Nazis and the, you know, Soviet communists ideologically were not that far apart, you know, in terms of...
Yeah, and that's going to become kind of a buzzword, too, or it already is a little bit of a buzzword. The smartest thing that I've seen... raised in the context of the discussion about the socialist label, which of course we have our Democratic Socialist candidate who comes from Vermont. People seem to like their Social Security okay, which is actually was intended to be kind of a savings program, not a dole. People seem to like their interstate highways okay. People seem to appreciate public education K-12 okay. It seems like there are a lot of public goods that are served, and that's it's not alien to our way of doing things to have things like the big things like a military, like a highway system, served.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
What do you think?
I think I agree with you on those points that there are sort of many, you know, many public goods that. Essentially can only be provided by, you know, by the government, either at the state level or at the federal level.
Well, it's curious. It's curious to see how labels are thrown around and how they're used to demonize, too. It's really...
But, any other listeners that might want to, you know, offer their opinions, you know, I'd be curious to hear, you know, other views on why Hitler and Mussolini and not, you know, Stalin... Wow.
Okay, we put that out there. Rick, thank you so much for your call. It's very thoughtful, and I really appreciate it. And I want to thank all these thoughtful folks who call in. I know several folks said they were nervous because they weren't experts. But you know what? To be on this program, what you need to be is thoughtful and open-minded. And I really appreciate all the calls that we got in here today on various subjects. You are tuned to WDEV 550 AM, broadcasting out of Waterbury, also 96.1 FM in Warren, Vermont, and 96.5 FM in Barrie, Vermont. Stay tuned. We've got news coming up. Hester Fuller's my name, and I'll be back next week.